parent's perspective. Almost done, Shira called across the aisle of children's games to her friend Lucy. I just have to pick up a couple small stuffed animals for the little ones. Okay, Lucy replied. Maybe I should grab one or two just to have when my sister's kids come over. She made her way over to the shelves of brightly colored plush toys. Look at this, Shira beamed. A tiny giraffe that looks like the real thing. Max will love it. This parrot will be perfect for Carrie. Shira pulled out a colorful plush toy from the bin. Of course, at 6 months, she'll mostly be tasting it, she smiled. Did you check the tags? Shira asked. You know, they're supposed to label stuff according to some kind of safety standards. I think it has to do with the age of the child. Yep, I looked. The tag says for children 0 to 9 months, Lucy responded. I really love those colors. She turned the parrot over to admire it. Wait a minute. Get a load of this. She marched over to her friend's shopping cart and held out the bird face down. This tag says that the dye on this toy can be hazardous and for children not to put it to their mouths. What do they think babies do with everything? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about safety in toys and children's products? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert in this exact area. Rachel Weintraub is the Director of Product Safety and Senior Counsel for Consumer Federation of America, CFA. Her primary focus is advocacy on product safety issues. Ms. Weintraub represents CFA on behalf of consumers before the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Congress, state legislatures, and within voluntary standard-setting organizations. Rachel and her husband, Scott Reiter, also an attorney, live in Washington, D.C., and are the parents of three children, Ezra, 6.5, Eliana, 4.5, and Dahlia, 21 months. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Rachel.
Thank you. It's really an honor to be here today.
What's the biggest myth about safety in children's products?
I think the biggest myth is that all products are tested for safety and that some entity gives some stamp of approval before a product is on the shelf. Unfortunately, that is not always the case at all. We are striving to get there. With the passage of legislation that passed in August of 2008, the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, that moves us much, much closer to that point by requiring that toys and children's products that are subject to mandatory standards, that those products be required to be tested to those standards. So that will, in fact, be a stamp of approval, ensuring that some entity, and really an independent third-party entity, tested the product, evaluated the product to make sure that it meets the standards that it's supposed to. But we are not entirely there yet. We're much closer, and closer than we've ever been before.
Now, you said products that are connected to mandatory standards. That means there are products that aren't, right?
That's right.
What are those products? We say with a gulp.
Well, first of all, this law was the culmination of the work of many, many consumer advocates. It was years in the making, and there's provisions that have been priorities for years and years. And there are a number of significant provisions that get to the point that you mentioned exactly, and that is that it creates more mandatory standards than ever existed before. So there is a provision that is named after Danny Kazar, who is this gorgeous 10-month-old child who was killed in a portable crib when he was in his daycare in Chicago. His parents are professors at University of Chicago, and they have since turned this tragedy into advocacy and started an organization called Kids in Danger. And partnering with Kids in Danger, CFA, and other consumer groups, worked hard to implement a provision that makes what are currently voluntary standards for a whole set of infant durable products. So those products are like strollers and high chairs and bouncy seats, all the types of things that you use for young children. So it makes standards for those things, cribs, bassinets, things like that, makes those standards mandatory over time. And the standard for cribs was just made mandatory at the end of last year, which was a huge victory.
What does over time mean?
So there's a list of about 12 products and 2 products a year. And there's already been about four or five, I think, that there are standards that have been promulgated for those things.
So how do we know which ones have the mandatory standards and which ones are still waiting, drip, 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 for the next time?
Right. Well, it's sort of hard for consumers to decipher that. The good news is that for cribs, which we were seeing the most significant problems, there were recalls of cribs for drop sides, for hardware that was falling apart. There were too many deaths, too many injuries. And cribs are the one place that, as a parent, you put your baby to be safe. It is supposed to be a safe haven. And as a parent myself, purchasing a crib was the hardest decision that I made because it's designed for you to leave your child, actually. So it was really a breach of trust that there were so many cribs that were so unsafe for consumers. The good news is that the standard has passed. It's the strongest crib standard in the world. It really replicates real-world use, which is something that we've been working on and trying to persuade the voluntary standard entity at the time to include a durability test, which it does. That's the good news. And that standard went into effect in the end of December. 6 months from then, it will be applied to all cribs. And there are a number of cribs now that actually meet that standard now. So that's the good news. I think overall, for infant durable products and for toys and children's products, we are in a very optimistic time. It will take some time to get there, but more than ever before, there are strong standards in the pipelines that will become mandatory and that manufacturers need to test their products to meet them. So the timelines vary for different products, but there is a much more intense scrutiny than there's ever been before on safety and on compliance with the standards that exist.
In a lot of cases, young families in particular will buy used children's equipment. Are you recommending against that at this point?
For cribs, definitely. Consumers should be very careful and parents should be very careful about purchasing a used crib. A parent should not buy a drop side crib at this point and should really purchase a non-drop side. Most used retailers really limited the amount of infant durable products that they're selling for these reasons, which I know is difficult for parents who are looking to buy things at more affordable prices. But in the long term, it's very important that people buy products that comply with the latest safety standards.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on safety in toys and other children's products.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Rachel Weintraub about safety in children's toys and other children's products.
A few days ago, I pulled out of a storage area in my house a baby bouncy seat, and as I pulled it out of the storage closet, a little animal head on a spring pulled off and disappeared into my closet, and I thought, I have to get rid of the whole thing, because if it pulled off that readily when I was just pulling it out, the other two could pull off too, and that's a real danger. Then you've got these exposed springs.
That's right. Exactly right. And also, that head could pose a choking hazard if it would go into a child's mouth. That's a really important point. And that's a really important point for parents as they're considering purchasing anything for their children. And that is, you know, is it durable? Test it. Pull at it. Do pieces come off? Does it seem like it's going to break? Does it seem too fragile for the way your child uses a product? I mean, that's, I think, the most important rule. How do your children play with products? How many children are in the household? Are there some products, you know, if you have an older child like I do and a younger child, we have toys that have small parts that are just for my son's room. And he closes the door and that's where he plays with it, which I think is nice developmentally because he has his privacy also, but to keep it away from his baby sister. So that's important too. For younger children, choking hazards are one of the leading hazard. You have to be very careful about the size. And as a tip for consumers, there is a choke test tube, which is the official measure of what the technical definition of a choke hazard is. Most people do not have choke test tubes. What we recommend, and it's a bit larger, but therefore a bit more protective, is a toilet paper tube. Everyone has one of those, clearly. So a parent or a caregiver, anyone, can check the part of a toy. And if it fits easily through a choke test tube, it should not be in the presence of a child 3 and under.
What should parents be most concerned about when they're purchasing a toy or a child product?
Well, I think the most important thing is that consumers need to be educated. And, you know, with education, you know, there's less concern but more awareness. So one important aspect of purchasing products is to make sure that the product has not been recalled. So there are many resources that consumers can use and also receive information about that. The Consumer Product Safety Commission is the independent federal agency that has jurisdiction over consumer products, from toasters to toys to strollers. That is under their jurisdiction. So consumers should go to their website and sign up for their listserv, where you can receive emails about different types of products. If you have young children, you could sign up for toys and infant products. If you want to find out about electronics, there's ways that you can separate out and sort of define what products you hear about. So that's something that's very important. You always want to make sure that the product that you own or consider purchasing has not been recalled. Another important step that consumers should take when it comes to infant durable products is registering the products. This is a relatively recent requirement. It also was included in the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, which was passed August of 2008. And that requires that manufacturers of this subset of infant durable products, which are the strollers, high chairs, bouncy seats, that those products be accompanied with a card or an electronic means where you register the product. Your consumer information is protected. The information can only be used in case of a recall or other safety information. And you basically just let them know how to get in contact with you. It's important to fill out these cards. And they're different than the sort of warranty cards that come with toaster ovens that ask for your education and your employment and your income. There's obviously huge disincentives not to fill those sorts of things out. These are very different. And for consumers, they need to understand how important it is to fill out these cards. My organization, CFA, Consumers Union, who's the publisher of Consumer Reports, and Kids in Danger have a brochure that we are happy to send out that's available online on our website, which is www.consumerfed.org, at Kids in Danger's website, www.kidsindanger.org. Research shows that the best way to find out about recalls is to be notified directly.
If you could advise parents about to buy items for outdoor use, like bikes, sports helmets, skateboards, what should they look for?
Well, the most important thing is if you are considering buying one of these products, you must accompany them with safety equipment. If you're buying a bike, buying a skateboard, also buy the helmet. Also buy knee pads, buy elbow pads. That sort of equipment is just as important, sometimes even more so, than the other pieces. In addition to the safety accessories, it's important to make sure that they're sturdy. Does the bike seem sturdy? Does the skateboard seem sturdy? Do the wheels seem to glide easily? Just a classic sort of check, evaluating the parts, making sure it's sturdy and all the bolts are tight is a way. The other important thing is really going over the rules for using these products, making sure that the person who's purchasing communicates with the caregiver to make sure that you discuss, well, if you're going to ride this bicycle, you need to wear the helmet too. It's very important to teach children the rules about pedestrian and rider safety.
How can adults, when we buy these children's products, feel secure about them with so many recalls? In other words, okay, it hasn't been recalled today, but how do you do that?
Right. Well, there's always some uncertainty, as with all things in life. I think this is an optimistic time. There's the Consumer Product Safety Commission, for now, has a more robust budget, and they have more people, more authority, and much more scrutiny is going into the safety of children's products. So that's the good news. There's more information at our disposal. With product registration, that's an important way where consumers can find out about whether products are recalled. There are standards that exist that have never existed before for lead content in the substrate of materials, for crib standards. There's more standards in the pipeline, which haven't existed before. So there's more standards that have to be met. And eventually, these products will need to be tested for safety. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has stayed enforcement of testing to lead in the substrate.
What does substrate mean?
The lead standards that existed before only applied to lead in paint. Those standards have existed since the 70s. We know that there were lead in paint in homes, and that number was greatly reduced. And for the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the law was that lead had to be no more than 600 parts per million in paint. But for the products itself, for the plastic itself, for the vinyl itself, there was no limit on lead. The Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act plugged the legal hole and has a very strong lead provision, which ratcheted down the lead limit in paint from 600 to 90 parts per million. First, there was no standard for lead in the substrate. And in the substrate, that's sort of the plastic, the vinyl, the product itself.
Which means kids could have these plastic toys and put them in their mouths?
Right, and which did happen. And that's what really led to the passage of the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. There were recalls of lead in very popular, beloved childhood icons like Elmo, like Thomas the Tank Engine. And it was those recalls, the vast majority of consumers in this country owned one of those products in their home. And it really, I think, brought into focus the biggest myth that products are not tested for safety before they were sold. It really led Congress to focus on these issues and for the passage of the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on safety in toys and other children's products.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Rachel Weintraub about safety in children's toys and other children's products.
So now if a parent buys one of those kinds of products, it's been tested, it's okay?
Well,
not exactly.
Right. So,
oh, dear.
I wish it were that clear cut. At this point, these products need to meet the standards. So right now, the standard is 300 parts per million. So lead should not exceed 300 parts per million in the plastic toy, for example. Most children's products, the vast majority, are made overseas, and this law applies to products no matter where they're made. So the manufacturers need to comply with the standard. Unfortunately, the testing requirements have been stayed, and will continue to be stayed. So basically, the manufacturers have been very frustrated by the cost of testing and what they feel is a lack of information about testing. And also there are some rules that the CPSC has not yet promulgated. So they have been successful in extending the stay and getting a stay on the testing provisions.
So that means we don't have any assurance. In fact, the chances are probably that it hasn't been tested, even though it's supposed to have
X number of parts. Except for the fact that if the toy does not comply, then it's in violation.
Except who decides if it complies? Does it before it gets to the port?
So the manufacturer, even if they're not required to prove that they tested, they pretty much have to take significant steps to ensure that it does comply. So
what?
So that's the question. What are they doing? And that's why the testing provisions are so important. And without the testing provisions, it's not entirely clear what they're doing. And the other problem is that if there is a violation, we're probably not going to find out until it's already on the market, which is the state of the universe that it was before the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act was passed. But the good news is that the standards are in place and the products need to meet the standards. They need to meet the lead limits. They need to meet the toy standards.
But who decides whether they meet them? I'm picturing, okay, the toid's made in Outer Mongolia, it gets on a ship, and the ship goes to San Francisco or someplace,
right,
and it's unloaded, and here are all these Elmos or whatever they are, and they're going to go to retail stores all over the place.
There are a number of checks. First of all, the major retailers have standards themselves, often require testing data and to see samples of products and to see documentation that the products meet the tests. So if you're buying products in a major retailer, there's that level of safety. Retailers have moved beyond the stay and have required that information themselves to ensure that the products that they're selling to the public do in fact meet the standards. Another important piece is that, for example, one of the largest ports where toys, for example, come in is the port of Long Beach in California. And there are efforts that have been made more robust where CPSC is working with customs and is looking at the manifests, looking at the information accompanying the products to ensure that the products meet standards. And they have been turning some products away.
Are there facilities in the United States where if the toys come in and they have this piece of paper, isn't that nice, but we don't know whether the piece of paper really means that anything happened wherever it was manufactured, is there a place in the United States where somebody who's in charge could send these toys and say, hey, you know, why don't you test this one?
CPSC staff is not robust enough. They are still a small agency, but there are CPSC employees and customs officials who have authority to stop products at the port. And sometimes they will have information and they will look at products that turn out to be problematic. Sometimes they screen them in some ways. So that has been productive. The borders are not, you know, airtight, and things unfortunately do come in, but then there are further steps because of the standards that retailers have. And then, unfortunately, this would happen after the product is in the market, which was the whole point of the Consumer Product Safety Act, to make toys safer from as early in the supply chain as possible. So to make sure that products are tested, that there are strong standards, you know, for manufacturers so that when they get into the country, products don't need to be recalled. Because once there's a recall, obviously it's out there and you need to put, you know, the shattered egg all back together, which is almost impossible. The other layer, unfortunately, once it's in the market, is the recall.
How do you see the marketplace for toys and children's products in the future?
So I'm actually optimistic. The Consumer Product Safety Commission is an agency that has been given more energy, more authority, more resources to protect consumers. The one scary point is appropriations, the budget. And if the commission's budget is cut significantly, it will be really devastating for product safety and devastating for implementation of the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. So that's one piece that I am concerned about. But in terms of product safety broadly, because of the mandatory standards that have been passed for cribs and for other products, because of the other standards that are in the pipeline, because testing will be required soon, these are all steps that have really never been in the pipeline before, and that will change how our products are made and how they're tested.
Okay. Well, this is a conversation that could go on for a very long time. We're all, of course, very concerned. But before we close, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to follow up on a lot of these issues?
In terms of resources, policy information, consumers can go to my organization's website, which is www.consumerfed.org. Also, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website, which is www.cpsc.gov. That's a place where consumers can check about product safety recalls, and they could also sign up for the recall listserv, which is very important. Something else that is very important that I think will really transform how a consumer becomes educated is a consumer incident database, which will be online. If a consumer is evaluating a product for safety, and if they see, for example, that, you know, a small part comes off the head of a spring, number one, they should take it away from their child. Number two, they should call the manufacturer and tell them about the problem, and they should also contact the Consumer Product Safety Commission. When a consumer currently and in the past communicated with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, that information wasn't public, because by law, the commission could not disclose information about particular products unless the manufacturer agreed to release that information. But this database is going to provide a place where consumers can report information electronically. And all this information, importantly, has to be related to safety. It's not about whether, you know, you liked this toy. It's about safety. So if you know of a problem with safety or you think there's a high risk of a safety problem, that's what this database is for. So consumers can go to report this information and can do research. Because if you're a consumer looking to buy a stroller, for example, if you go to CPSC's website now, you'll find recall information. That's it. But with this database, once it's online, once it's populated with reports, consumers will find other safety information about strollers and other products, which I think is going to really be transformative for parents. It will be one place to go to find safety information, which will be really important. That website is www.saferproducts.gov. And then there's other organizations that have useful information also, such as Kids in Danger, such as Consumers Union. They have very useful information.
Well, this has been eye-opening and somewhat frightening, but a very optimistic look at what's coming. So, Rachel Weintraub, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor to be here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 468 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.